Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right, right thing. Now. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now, right now.
That's right, that's right. We do have the power. We must use our power. We must learn how to use that power, because in 2025, we don't have the luxury of squandering resources, time, or our power. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I am here at Harris Stowe State University, and we are live. I need to say that anything said on the show today is not necessarily that of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame, but we are glad you are here, so we have a great show. This is a year that we are already experiencing stress and trauma because of who was elected last November. And the man in the White House now is abusing his power, abusing what's left of the Constitution, abusing everything, and is causing stress financially, stress emotionally, stress physiologically. And so when we think about stress in our lives, we need to know how to manage it, but in some cases we need to know how to eliminate it altogether. And so we have two guests today that are really about holistic health. And so that's the body, mind, and spirit. And so when you're listening to them, I want you to just synthesize what they're saying so that you understand that our body is all connected. And we gotta take care of it, y'all, because taking care of ourselves allows us to take care of each other and then also to take care of our community. So that's a big task, but we gotta do it. We really do, you all. I'd like to introduce somebody that's no stranger to Voices from the Battlefield, and that's Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick. She has been here with us before to talk about how to take care of ourselves, our health, how to get, you know, some healthy habits going. And she is my go-to person for all matters health. Also joining us today is Azizi Blazette. And Azizi is a life coach. Her expertise is around the law of attraction, but she is also pretty well-rounded. I'd just like to welcome both of you all to the show today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So the reason I thought it would be a good match for you two to be together is because sometimes people look at health in these different silos. They look at health, you know, my physical health, but they don't know your mental health and emotional health is wrapped up in that too. And then they say, well, I understand that and I'm going to work on that. But then the things that you do is easy in terms of helping people understand how they make decisions, life decisions, also impact their health and vice versa. So it's all inextricably linked together in ways that I think we really still in 2023, 2024, Black folks don't still understand their bodies, how they work. So, you know, so I'm glad that both of you all do the work that you do and the way that you do it, because it's so important. But you know, I just want us to just get into the conversation about what would be a healthy way to start this year. And I'm thinking that there are indicators, there are health indicators that are influenced by our environment. And all the times we don't have control over our environments. So, for example, where you live, you may, that's where you live, that's where you can afford to live. And I don't know if you know this, Dr. Lisa, but in St. Louis, and this is a case in across the country in other urban areas. I had somebody last year from Milwaukee who knew 53206, which is one of the zip codes in Milwaukee where the worst health indicators are all concentrated there. The poverty rates are the highest, the incarceration rates are the highest, the death rates, are, everything is just, so they're just concentrated in one zip code. In St. Louis, that zip code is 63106. And even though one digit away is 63105, there's an 18-year life expectancy difference between those two zip codes. Now, people are saying, well, how can that be? Why should it be? We can't readily control that because if you live in 63106, there's still some things that you're going to have to do, even though you already know your life is doomed. I mean, they're basically telling us that through the stats. Your life is doomed because of the zip code that you live in. But we have always beat the odds, right? And we do that because we have a community way of looking at how we survive and how we interact. So, Dr. Lisa, I'm going to start with you first. One of the things I think you often talk about is just knowledge itself. And then you go into like, diet and exercise, and you don't even make a big deal about exercise and stuff, but like, what are the things that we need to know if we want to be holistically healthy?
Well, Ms. Jamal, I think you said it already, which is health is not just about what's happening with your body, but it's about what's happening with your mind, your heart, your spirit. And when I say heart, I don't mean the thing beating in your chest. I mean sort of the essence of who you are, how you process things, like how you walk in the world. And so we neglect our mental health all the time because we have too many things to do. We're too busy. So I think we first have to prioritize how we're feeling, whether or not we are taking space to find some peace and calmness. And to some people, this probably sounds just so unrealistic with all the things that are going on, kids, job, difficulties with transportation, all the things life throws at you. But no matter what your circumstances, if we don't take care of our minds and our spirit first, then what do we have left? So I think we have to keep talking about that because when people talk about health, the first thing they think is, okay, is it diabetes? Is it cancer? Is it heart disease? And a lot of those things actually come from not being mentally well and mentally whole. And so, people often ask me, well, it just seems, I don't know, I can't take time or I can't sit still or like meditating. What is that? How about just pray? If you're a praying person, how about praying? How about listening to music? How about sitting and staring? Like go outside and go to the mall and watch people pass by. So there are different ways people have to come up with strategies because it's so essential to our physical health. A lot of the high blood pressure we're seeing in our community is because people are completely stressed out and not finding ways to offset what's happening when you have high blood pressure. And so high blood pressure is a constant state of chaos in your body. So imagine over time, if you don't do something to counteract that, you're going to be really sick. And so that's where the mental health tricks come into play because all you're doing is balancing the impact of this stress that's on your body and making you sick over time. So it's like a pendulum or what, a seesaw. So, people, if it's empty, it's just balanced, right? Or if people weigh the same, it's balanced. But if you have one side that's heavier, the other side's going to go up. And so we have to find that balance between stress and relaxation. Easier said than done, though, I will admit.
It seems like though that part might be easy to understand, but it seems like the missing piece is that people don't understand how the actual body works. Because I think that if people, for example, knew what smoking did, because you can't readily see it, But if they understood what smoking does to literally every part of your body on the inside, they may not smoke. But I don't think that is known to them, or how the different organs interact with each other. So if one is not working, what's going to happen to the others? And I know we're supposed to get this in health education when we are in middle school, but that is something missing here, Doc. What is
Well,
it?
we didn't learn this part in middle school or probably even in high school. So any kind of disease you have in your body, it comes from being inflamed or a state of inflammation. So something is gone awry. It's like I used the word chaos earlier. It's like if inside your body, if your insides are not at peace, then we can say they're inflamed. So the question is, what is causing that? So it's things like smoking. It's things like drinking. It's drinking excessively, that is. Things, the foods we eat. There are a lot of foods like sugar. Sugar is very much something that creates inflammation in your body. And so this inflammation over time wreaks havoc on your organs and they start to break down. And that's why we get sick. Even cancer is a state of some kind of inflammation. And so the things we can do to control that are the same things we've heard probably from doctors and our grandmothers, eating and exercising. And so it matters what we eat. It matters if we exercise, because again, if you have all of this inflammation in your body, what is counteracting that? Or what are you doing to reduce the inflammation? And a lot of it starts with what we put in our mouth. Whether it's alcohol, cigarettes, the food we eat. So that's really something we all have to work on, myself included. My guilty pleasure is ice cream and chocolate chip cookies.
Well, both of those are mine, and I'll add some others
Yeah.
on there.
But
But
I
I
don't eat them
know,
every day, right? So that's the thing.
right.
And so I think a lot of people don't realize that if you bombard your body with these kinds of foods that are not good for us, and they create this inflammation in the body that gives you high blood pressure and diabetes and cancer, you can't eat like that every day, even multiple times a week. Think of it like an occasional treat, and the rest of the time, put the nutrients in your body you get from fruits and vegetables, drinking lots of water. There's a debate right now about whether or not you should eat meat or not. I'm a meat eater. I don't fry my foods. I don't coat them with things that are going to create a lot of inflammation and trouble inside my body. So I think meat is okay for a lot of people, but you have to be careful how you cook it. Baking, sauteing, broiling. There are some barbecue. There are some delicious ways to cook without frying food. So it sounds hard, but you really have to make a plan. I think that's what hurts a lot of us. We don't take the time to plan to eat the right things that will reduce the inflammation or keep the inflammation out of our bodies.
So when Dr. Lisa talks about, finding some peace and finding ways to be stress-free so that your body can heal itself, essentially. That's the place of ZZ where you have done some work. And I remember you and Saidiya Murphy did some stuff during COVID, just teaching people how to breathe to relieve stress. I mean, simple stuff like that was really helpful for people, I think. But I think too often we think we have to go somewhere in order, we have to be on a beach. I mean, I would like to be on the beach, but that's not likely to happen on a regular basis. So how do we find some space in our heads, in a room that kind of shuts everything out so we can know, here's my time, even if it's 5 minutes. What do I need to be doing during this time while I'm recharging?
So one of the things, and I thank Dr. Lisa for some of the things that you said, because I definitely saw the what's the word I'm looking for? The overlap of just some of the conversation that she was relaying. But one of the things that I think we need to focus on is I think we really need to rethink this whole self-care thing. I know it's become a buzzword nowadays. You know, Saidiya and I did this. Saidiya, who's a part of the Youth Council for Positive Development alumni and a transplant from St. Louis as well. We did this self-care rehab where we radically looked at self-care and we looked at the mind, body, spirit, and we really gave people some tools and processes that they could use right away to begin to live a healthier life. And a lot of that work starts with, I believe, intention setting. Now, I want to take a step back and talk about the difference between goal setting and intention setting. So intention setting focuses on the present. It focuses on an internal state of being. And then it also focuses on how do you feel? And it's in the moment feeling things. Many of us are disconnected from our emotions and feelings. When I'm working with clients as a life coach, I'm always asking people about their emotions. I get into the emotional development aspect of things. And do you know people can't tell you their emotion? They can't even identify it. They don't even know how they feel. They're not even tapped in to it. So that piece is extremely important to even be able to put a plan of action in place of where you want to get to, which is kind of going back to, let's look at that goal setting piece of it. When I was saying there's a difference between the two, the goal setting is going to focus on the future. It's a future outcome. It's an external accomplishment. And it has this specific action or something like, what am I going to do? Both of them can work hand in hand, but the intention thing you can do every single day. And you can do right now, and because it's a mindset shift. And that's what I love about the intention aspect of it. So I'm always telling people, if you can take a second to set an intention, I promise you, if you set that intention, then it's going to come, your energetic space, your there's a supernatural power, or this idea likes to say the unseen therapist. You know, there's something else that's going to collide where it's going to remind you, hey, you set that intention to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, you're going to want to do something different when that intention comes up or what have you for yourself. So I often tell people to set that intention. And it could be in a small intention, like when I start people out on meditation, I believe everybody should meditate. But when I start people out on meditation, I tell them to start small, 2 minutes. Okay. And whenever I start people on 2 minutes, guess what? They come back and said, that went so quickly, I didn't even get a chance to get in the moment. But guess what? We start expanding it from 2 minutes to 5 minutes. Okay. And then I keep building on that 5 minutes to 10 minutes to get people into a practice. And I tell them to just focus on nothing. Just focus on your breathing. And that's where the breath work piece come into play and what have you. If people just focus on their breathing aspect of things, oh my gosh, they just get so much energy back into their life just by taking a moment and breathing in and breathing out and breathing oxygen and all of that. And it's amazing how people really aren't doing some of those small things that can make a major difference over time.
I've been in some of those sessions with you, the 6-week thing where we stayed with a cohort group and just learning about the lives of people and how they are living and how they are making decisions. I think is really instructive because although I was not the facilitator, I'm just a participant. I'm thinking, man, I would love to have a conversation with you to talk about some of the decisions that you make and that keep bringing you back to the same place. So yes, Azizi and Saidiya are helping you get these tools, but if some of these other things don't change, it's almost like being on one of those wheels where you're moving, but you're not going anywhere. So, you know, the other piece that you do a lot of work around is really getting people to understand their past, their childhood, some of the things that happen in there. Sometimes it's trauma, so that they can learn how to move through that. Because understanding your past is going to predict your presence, but it's also going to unlock the future. So we stay a lot of times in that path because we haven't found the keys to open up the door. So what are the ways that people can realize the reason I keep doing this over and over again is because of this in my past? And how do I break from that?
So the key is awareness. You can't change anything you don't acknowledge. You can't change anything that's not in your present awareness. So if you're in a space of denial, I'm not the one to help. That's a therapist that you probably will need to see. You need to go to, you know, see a therapist or a psychiatrist to get through some of that sort of a stuff. When you start working with a life coach, you're at a point where you know some of those things and you kind of have an idea of some of the past and some of that stuff is peering its head, but you don't really know where do I go from here. And that's where a life coach comes in. It's a place to give you some tools and some processes to be able to chart a new direction, you know, for yourself. Your mind is very powerful. Your thoughts is very powerful, which is one of the reasons why I like that. I get into the law of attraction, Jamala, which you talked about in your introduction, which simply is a law. It's a universal law that says that which you focus on, you magnetize into your life. It is absolutely true, whether you believe it or not, whether you use it or not, it's acting in default. So what I do is I help people how to get in alignment with this law so that it's working in your favor. And so what you think about is what you're creating in your reality. You know, Dr. Lisa talked about the different inflammation and stuff. And one of the things I thought about was not only the food, the toxic environments we're in, the stress. Oh my gosh, stress creates so much inflammation in our bodies and everything. And so we need to be really mindful of that. And even the words that are coming out of our mouths, I can't tell you how many people that I work with that I'm always asking, well, what is it that you want? And their first thing they tell me is what they don't want. We're focused on the wrong thing. If I'm steady focusing on what I don't want, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to attract what I don't want into my life. It's pure. It's simple. You know, so it's a mindset thing that I try to work with people to give them some tools, simple tools. If I can give you three things for 2024, I would tell you to just look at mind, body, and spirit. Answer three questions for those particular categories. The first is, what do I want? Why do I want it? The why is always going to be important because it is the driving force behind everything. And then how do I want to feel? Okay. Because if you don't know how you want to feel when you arrive there, how are you going to know? You have to have that in mind. You have to have that in your emotional state and well-being and everything. So think about those three things. What do I want? Why do I want it? And how do I want to feel?
What you made me think about when you acknowledged that there's certain things that are out of your realm of impact. And I think that's important because oftentimes people give advice, but that's not their expertise. And I'm not saying that you can't give advice. I'm saying, because a lot of times people have some issues, it's easy. And I'm like, I think you do need a therapist. I can be an ear and I'm a good listener, but what I'm hearing, I'm not going to be able to help you. And so, and so knowing that is then when you can go to Dr. Lisa, who's been studying, who's been working this, can help you. So Dr. Lisa, I'm thinking about when we get to the point where we don't have a true wellness plan, what do you say folks could do? I mean, we know that people don't always have access to insurance. And if they don't have access to insurance, they're more than likely not seeking anything that keeps them well. They may come in when they are sick, because that's the kind of system that we have set up, is for sick people, not to keep people well. What are the things that you are telling people to do when they obviously need some help, both mentally and physiologically, and even things that you may not be able to do? And do people really follow that? You give them advice?
Well, certainly not everyone, right? There are no absolutes here, because this is such an individual thing. A lot of my work is with people who are from underserved or poor communities. Also, that includes homeless populations. And it's really hard for a lot of folks to take this advice. It's just, as I mentioned, it just doesn't feel realistic for them. And so sometimes it's simple things like, if you live in a shelter and you're getting frustrated, just go outside for a few minutes and take a deep breath. And it was interesting listening to Azizi. Is it Azizi? I'm saying that right. Okay, yeah. Because I'm also a huge fan of the breath. I practiced yoga for a long time, and breathing is a big part of that. We take it for granted because a lot of people don't understand how to breathe. They know, if you say, okay, sigh, they know how to do that. And so that's a good place to start. But I think we have to help educate people, even know, okay, where are your lungs? What do they do? How do they help you before you can actually jump into teaching somebody something that sounds simple, which is how to breathe? A lot of us don't know how, but it can be so powerful as a mechanism. Wherever you are, if you're on the bus, you know, if you're in the shelter, if you're at work and someone really upsets you, people don't really have this tool. We have to show them and help people learn how to use it as a powerful tool that it is. The other thing about taking advice is, Azizi also mentioned, our environments are difficult sometimes. And one of the most common recommendations for someone with a chronic health condition like heart disease or diabetes or obesity is to change the way you eat. And I had a woman say to me, she was just really frustrated by my advice. And she said, look, Dr. Lisa, I love oranges, but they're too expensive. And I also had an Uber driver tell me this about apples. He said, I love apples, but one day I went to the grocery store and it was almost $2 for one apple. I really freaked out. So I think we have to, it's not as easy as giving advice and expecting people to go out and follow that advice. We also have to ensure people have the infrastructure and the support they need to be healthy. And that's where we're falling down in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned this zip code disparity. People in 63105 live 18 years shorter lives than someone in 63106.
The opposite.
That is throughout the United States.
Yeah.
Because structurally, you make enough money, you can live in a certain neighborhood where all the services are. And if you don't, you live in 63105.
6106.
6106, sorry. And that's not
where
okay.
Food deserts are, where hardly any services are. Yeah.
So we have to address that if we really want to help people live healthier lives, no matter who they are, whether it's the person in the shelter, you know, or the mom who's got multiple kids working two jobs. We can't expect people to do this alone. So yeah. I don't fault people for not taking my advice. I could give it all day long, but if it's not practical for them, then you have to break it down. And so most of the time I'll say, well, let's just talk about one thing you can do. There's getting enough sleep, drinking more water. Like, let's pick the goal and just start there. But even that sometimes can be hard because some of this is about habits. A lot of it's about habits. And to break a habit, it's very challenging to break a habit.
It goes back to that intention mindset, you talked about.
Change your mindset.
Yeah. I'm, you know, one of the things that I've seen more of, and I would say probably in the last couple of years, where I've seen, and I would say mainly it's health clinics that are offering fresh fruits and vegetables, and people get some kind of card to spend at the fruits and vegetables. So that, for example, this person that says it's too high, it's those prices are pretty reasonable and you're getting the free vouchers. So there's nothing to complain about. I've seen more of that and that's been encouraging. But I know that what people need are some decent grocery stores, which by and large are not in our communities. And so you have to travel to get to them, which is another issue. So I think for Black people, particularly poor and working class people, it is a challenge to be healthy. And but I think both of you all are saying, you know, do one thing at a time, start with one thing, master that and go to something else. And then it won't seem like it's so overwhelming, because when I see Black families, you know, all you could see all of the stuff coming at you, like the family has a history of high blood pressure of the other one, the Diabetes, and it's almost like I can't escape it because it's in my family. Yes, you can. It's not a death sentence because your last name is Mitchell. You know, there's some things you could do, but and then you know they live in a house where you know lots of fried chicken gets cooked, and you know, so it's all this, you know, things that are reinforcing all the bad habits that you talk about. But I think,
but Ms. Jamala, I think what we forget is you have to cultivate that kind of palate. If you're used to drinking Kool-Aid, I'm talking about me growing up, drinking Kool-Aid, eating Hostess, and eating fried chicken.
And eating ramen noodles.
Yeah, I mean, your taste buds are primed for that. And so if you eat some broccoli and some baked chicken, sure, you can make those taste good. Your taste buds prime for that fried chicken, right, in the Kool-Aid. So I think bringing that awareness so people realize there are better options to support your health. But this is where that intention comes in, right? Azizi, you have to decide. Definitely do something different. It's a long game. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen in 2 weeks. Like if you need to lose 10 pounds, you haven't lost a pound in 2 weeks. You can't give up. I'm dealing with this myself right now because I've been working out. I've been working out for 3 months. I lost 2 pounds. Right. So you really, it's hard, but you have to decide. Once you decide, you find a way.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are here battling unhealthy habits. And with us are Zizi Blissett and Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick. And we really are trying to wrap our heads and arms and hearts around an issue that is literally killing Black folks in our community. And that's why this is so, so important. The thing that I also think about, Dr. Lisa, is the unseen, and because oftentimes, and I say that everything negative that happens to you leaves a mark. You may not be able to see it, but it's like how luminol does blood. Somebody shone a light on our body, they would say, God, what have you been through? Because it's all there. It's all there. And but oftentimes we don't understand how things are impacting us and how we're processing them to actually go into our DNA, to go into the very vessels and muscles of every being of our body. And now we're unhealthy and we don't know why. So talk a little bit about what is unseen that we know is happening to our people, and how we can use each other in a supportive way to help illuminate the things that are happening to people that sometimes we can see better than they can see for themselves.
It's going to sound very simplistic, but we'll have to talk. Is when you hold things inside, also creates a lot, it wreaks a lot of havoc, creates inflammation in the body. That is also a form of trauma when you don't share or you don't unburden yourself. So you asked earlier about some of the advice I give people. Also, I would sometimes match people up with a buddy. Someone I felt was isolated and alone too much, and maybe, really dealing with a heavy issue about their health. I would match them with someone I had seen who also had the same problem. You know, I get both their permission. Do you want to talk to this person? Can I give them your number? And so on. That is really powerful. I think also finding it in the community. The problem is there's a lot of shame. We talk about not wanting to air your dirty laundry and putting your business out in the street, but everyone needs to try to find some sort of confidant, talk, and get this out so you're not holding it. The traumas, I would love to hear, what Azizi thinks about this, but at some point we have to find ways to release trauma. It's going to live in your body, manifest in different ways, whether it's pain, disease, or some sort of mental disorder like depression, anxiety. So we also don't talk enough about therapy. Therapy is kind of a bad word. So let's, you know, we can call it something else. We could just, like I said, just find somebody to talk to. Basically what it is. But I think it's so stigmatized. We have to move past that because that's killing us. Sure, Zizi has things to say about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything that Dr. Lisa is saying. You know, I kind of look at this from an energetic standpoint. You know, in my practice, we believe everything is energy. The food we put in our bodies is made up of energy. The furniture that we are sitting on, the words that are coming out of our mouth. And so when you look at like that, look at it from that perspective, it's a matter of being able to identify where is my energy and how can I release this energy or shift this energy into a higher vibratory space so I'm connected and aligned to my highest self. So a couple of things that we do in our practice is we use many different modalities. I really get into meditation from a healing standpoint where I help people go into that inner child. I have an inner child story. Many of us in the Black community have an inner child story that relates to some sort of trauma or abuse or something like that. And so I've used these modalities early on when I was going through therapy. I do think that people are becoming a little bit more open to therapy than they were, let's say, some 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know, at least we're able to say the word therapy. It was to a point where it was a little taboo that you didn't even hear, you know, the word itself or what have you. So at least we're being able to hear that.
Or it was white people who used therapists, not Black folks.
Yeah, not Black folks, you know, using the therapy and everything. So I think that, you know, tapping into where that trauma is and releasing it. Really, I have a number of different meditations that I take people through to do that. In our self-care rehab program, we actually do some EFT tapping to assist people with that. Jamala, you experienced some of that as well. We have the breath work, the yoga. I'm a huge fan of exercise. Exercise always shifts, you know, energy. As well, I have an intention setting exercise. I have many different processes that I can give to people. And all of them is bringing you back to one area. And that's you being in the driver's seat and creating what you want your life experience to be. You're saying, hey, I'm here and I want to be there. How do I get to there? So I help you shift to be able to get into that place. However, I just want to reiterate, with working with the type of life coaching work that I do, you have to have some sort of awareness of what that is, that trauma is, that past is, that issue is, in order to move forward. I'm not going to be the person that's going to help you, you know, figure that out. Some of it may come up and we hit on it or what have you. And you may say, hey, I don't want to dive any deeper. I just want to move forward and I may help you release it or what have you. But yeah, I have many different tools and techniques that can be used. I'm a huge, huge fan of journaling. I have so many journals over the years. Oh my gosh, if people picked up my journals and found them somewhere, they'll find out all kind of stuff. But I have a lot of different journals. And I've recently started over the last 10 years doing gratitude writing and forgiveness writing. And the forgiveness writing is extremely powerful because it's another thing that puts us in this stuck energy because we're holding on to something. And a lot of times it's some kind of trauma. Somebody said, did something to us, or we said, did something to somebody else, you know. And so, you know, doing that writing out and all of that and the exercise with the forgiveness journaling really helps because I teach people to understand that every time you forgive, you have something to be grateful for because you've gained something, you know, in return. So I have a number of different tools and techniques that I help people with to be able to, you know, release and shift out of that energetic space they may be in.
Interesting that you use that word forgive because the Youth Council for Positive Development partnered with a few folks to create the men village, because one of the things we were looking at is the data that said Black men don't take care of themselves. They don't go to the doctor. And so we were focusing in on 18 to 24. And so we did this new men village, and part of it were different things that, that the men could do. But one of them was, what's the modality that you use your hand?
Reiki.
So there was a sister doing Reiki after each person. And I was really kind of surprised at the men who went over there to get that work done. But we try to create a welcoming space because it's all men. And so they say, oh, that brother's doing it. Maybe I'll do it. She said, give me a word after each one. And so afterwards, she shared some of that with me. And one of the persons that who had done it, the first word that came out of her mouth was forgiveness. But that was different but powerful, because how did that work? And what was she thinking about? Like, who does she need to forgive? But the fact that that released some of that negative energy, I'm like, wow, this is more different than I thought it was. But yeah, we, you know, the movement of our bodies, the way that we talk and share, all of that is releasing things. And it made me think about the work that we've been doing more and more with Black Healers Circle to really make mental health peace like common, like everyday, like it's not a big thing for you to be talking about. You stressed out or you need some help. So when Dr. Lisa talks about parent people, one of the things that they say in the Black Healers Collective is Black healing is really community healing. You're using the community to help heal, but you also then become a part of a more healthy community. And pairing people together, I think I'm surprised that people are willing to do it, but I'm glad to hear that they do, because I just think sometimes people need somebody to talk to.
They agree because it's you know, a point of desperation.
Yeah.
We talked to some people on the street a few months ago about mental health, just getting people's, you know, sense about it. What do you think of when I say mental health? And there was this Black young man who said, mental health, that's for weak people.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what do you mean? He goes, that's weak. Like, man, that's not for us. Mm-hmm. And I tried to ask this question in so many ways, and he was like glued to his position that, you know, men thinking about their mental health was only a sign of weakness. Like, and you shouldn't cry unless you lost somebody in your family. Like, that's the only reason a man should be crying. And so the question is, how do we get rid of that perception that is weak? Because we all, whether it's, you know, mental health is on a continuum. We like to call people crazy in the Black community, right? But the truth is, if you're stressed out about something, maybe you're a student who has a test, like you're having a mental health issue right then, because you have to figure out how to deal with your stress, all the way to someone who has like a chronic mental health challenge that requires medication and in some cases treatment. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in between. And depending on the day, we are all on somewhere on that continuum. And I think that's what we have to get people to realize and accept. It's not just one thing we're talking about. Like, it's thousands of things we're talking about that could happen to any one of us at any given time.
I remember being at a workshop. There was a white woman who was saying that she didn't think we should be using the word post-traumatic stress, because then that's labeling people. And I said, no, it's the other way around. When people understand that some of this was above and beyond them, and this is why they're operating in this way, they need to know that it's not them.
Not their fault.
Victimizing them, it's empowering them. And when I have the explanation that, and I do frequently, that all Black people are suffering not just from slave traumatic trauma, but in the words of Dr. Sean Wainwright, it is distant traumatic syndrome, because not only do we have what was left over from slavery, it's the everyday trauma of racism and what it does to us on a daily basis. So when I use that framework, then people are like, oh yeah, you know, this not like I have to admit that it's just all me, but it's outside influences that are shaping the way you think about yourself, other people. And so that's why we both have to fight for you to have healthy body, mind, and soul, but we also have to have a healthy Black community that's going to reinforce that healthy mind, body, and soul. So I've heard that, Dr. Lisa, about, you know, men, that's a sign of weakness. And so the New Men's Village then has men talking about that, and there were health professionals there. And so when men see other men look like them and may not be somebody in a suit and tie who can afford a real therapist, then it's like, oh, maybe I should go over there and see what's happening. So we've had some success with that. We're going to do it again next year. But yeah, it's just like we got all these messages about what strength is, what is a man, what is, you know, what is being healthy. And it just makes, when we internalize it, it just makes us unhealthier. When you're doing the work and you just been doing the thing on maternal health and all of that, because that's another thing where the data for Black women is just like deplorable, where Black babies are dying. You know, it's like, what in the world is going on? Aren't the hospitals taking care of these folks? That's what I often hear. Aren't these folks going to prenatal care? Why are you concerned about the prenatal deaths? You learned
Because
when you
they're
were
preventable.
here. Yeah, for sure.
We know that most of the maternal deaths and the infant deaths are preventable at some point. And so people like to blame the health system most often, saying, oh, the health system is racist. This is why Black women are dying and so on. That might be true, but it's a much bigger problem than that. Because when you talk to women who've had problems with their pregnancy or problems with their infant, map it back to what happened throughout the pregnancy. A lot of the people who have poor outcomes in pregnancy have some health condition that makes it hard for them to be pregnant. High blood pressure, diabetes, obesity. If you get pregnant in that state, untreated high blood pressure, untreated diabetes, and obesity also puts you in a high risk category because you already have a bit of stress on your body, and then pregnancy is a very stressful thing for the body to have to go through, and so you're compounding it with a pregnancy. And a lot of people don't know they're pregnant until they're already close to their second trimester, so they didn't get the early testing to identify these things. And then if you're, I'm going to use the word sick. You have some health condition like high blood pressure that's not treated. You start out your pregnancy there, and then you get all this stress associated with pregnancy. It just compounds the problem. It makes it worse. And then by the time you get to delivery, you're really at high risk for things like hemorrhage or bleeding. And if you've already had high blood pressure and it's not being properly treated, that can create problems for the mom and for the baby. And so I think as a society, we have to decide to focus on prevention. It's not just a racist health system that's not listening to Black moms. That's a big part of it too. When they say something doesn't feel right and they're dismissed, oh, well, you know, you're pregnant. And so that's just how, you know, you can expect to have those pains. It's not just that. It is our society needs to focus on educating people about their bodies, as you say, what to look for, and why going to get an evaluation or getting a physical exam when you're pregnant, why getting that in the beginning of your pregnancy is so important. So we're missing a lot of different pieces that are amounting to these death rates and these problems with pregnancies for Black women.
And I think the point that both of you are all making is that the prevention and intervention that we do with ourselves can actually result in longer and more productive, healthier, happier lives.
Yeah,
And I think,
absolutely.
Black folks, I would say as a whole, we're fairly miserable. And I say it's because of our health status and how we see each other, especially when we get up under stress, then, we can get ugly. And so we're starting to see more violence, more domestic violence, more community violence, and it's not healthy. And that's why I'm glad that people have violence as a health issue, as a public health issue, because it's not just out of the blue that it happens. It's got its roots in the very things that we've been talking about today. So, Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, Azizi Blissett, thank you for being with us to start this year off healthy. And I can tell you that I will be using this particular episode throughout the year because I think we're going to need some reminders about how easy you all made it to do something, even if it's just one or two things. And so thank you for all that you do and for our community. And thank you for sharing with us today. I have a few announcements for you. I don't need to remind you about this, but this is Black History Month, and there is so much always going on, both on television, in a community. So too much to talk about now, but keep your mind, your head into what's going on in the community and try to get as much knowledge as you can about Black history and our contributions to the world. This is also election season, so we have citywide elections both for our mayor and a number of other offices, but there's also the school board election. And so we need to be woke. We need to be as informed as possible. We have a couple of shows coming up with the mayoral candidates and Mayor Jones. So you want to stay tuned for that. I'm hoping by then we will have figured out how to do live streaming so that you can join those conversations. But stay woke, stay healthy, stay involved. This is Jamala Rogers. See you on the battlefield. Thanks for listening.
We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing right now.